Greetings, flock. This is Jasmine. This is your weekly bonus content. Hopefully by now you have had a chance to listen to my whole interview with PJ Nyman. PJ is such an incredible activist across so many areas. I began the interview already as a fan of PJ. I'm talking about you like you're not here, but you are here. I'll stop talking about you. PJ, welcome to the flock. Thank you for joining us. I was just saying that I was already a fan of your work and your outlook and your communication and your writing and your advocacy efforts. But now, I mean, really, you sealed the deal at the end when you told me about being in the LGBTQ choir in Canada. So I'm just really excited that you exist and that now that I live in Rochester, you're only like 2.5 hours away. So welcome to the flock and to being friends with me.
Thank you, Jasmine. I'm so happy that this resulted in friendship. And yeah, really happy to be here.
I'm assuming. I didn't ask for your consent in that friendship. I guess I'll start your bonus segment by asking if you'll be my friend.
I would love to. Thank you so much. Yes, an honor.
Okay, great. Well, then I think we're done. No, I'm kidding. I have a few more questions. All right. Well, we covered a lot of ground and I did have a few questions for you that occurred to me while we were chatting about your childhood. I would love it if you could go back in time with me. I want to know where you grew up and what your relationship with food was like growing up.
Okay, yeah. Well, I grew up in Toronto, in Canada. I grew up in North York, which is an area of Toronto that's like was sort of a suburb, but still very much a part of the city. And I grew up with a companion cat named Glebes. His official name was Shadow, and then at some point I changed his name anyway when I was an adult. So Glebes, my cat, was really like my first connection with animals where I felt like a real sense of responsibility. My parents split up when I was 11 and Glebes came to live with me and my mom, and he kind of got lost in the shuffle during like family dynamic shifting, and so I felt like a real sense of like I have to protect him. And he is like my responsibility. And I think that like did something for me in terms of like my sense of responsibility for others. When it comes to food and my relationship with food, I didn't really think about it very much. I mean, I did experience as a teenager some food insecurity. And I think that I did have a sense that food and class were connected. And I think that did, you know, sort of inform my activism later. I think, though, at that time, it was just like some sense that like everything is interconnected, like food is connected to class, is connected to my family status and these types of things. And then later on, when I later on decided to go vegetarian, it really wasn't about food for me. It was an ethical decision based on like seeing others who were progressive and cared about social issues who were also vegetarian. So I don't really think I thought about food that much until I went vegan and then, you know, became obsessed with it like many of us do.
I can relate to a lot of aspects of that story down to like, I got a cat when I was around that age. My parents split up. They split up a lot. There were a lot of splitting ups. But the cat, Rocky, wound up being like this sort of anchor, like this consistency, you know? And so I feel like you mentioned you didn't think about food that much until you stopped eating animal flesh. And people often ask me about what animals I grew up with. And I think of Rocky, but at the time, you know, he was my cat. I don't think I had him in the same category as I have my dogs now, which are like, obviously, even though I got most of them when they were old, I obviously gave birth to them out of my body, just so that we're clear. And like, they're like my life. I love them. So Rocky was my cat. He was my childhood cat. He was always there. I think it was like decades later that I realized the value that these animals play in our lives, in our psyches, in our development, even if we're not completely obsessed with them, like maybe some of us are with our animals now.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's like I've only looked back as an animal advocate now and seen that connection with Glebes and realized like he was so fundamental to me, like having a sense of responsibility for animals. But I can say going back before that, like I was an oddly sensitive kid when it came to animal stuff. Like I could not watch the movie Milo and Otis I don't know if you remember this movie. It's like about, you know, a cat and a dog, like a like stranded in the forest. And the animals looked stressed. And as a child, like I would just cry the moment the movie came on. And it was like a rule that like my mom made that my brother could not put Milo and Otis on if I was in the room. So there's some kind of like, I know a lot of like vegans say this too, that there almost was like some kind of innate animal empathy that I know I experienced very young, but I certainly didn't connect that to food until like much later as an adult.
I want to go to that part where you're an adult and you're suddenly giving up meat, because what was it? Like what happened? I know you just mentioned you saw in others who cared about a better world, being part of a better world, that they chose to no longer eat meat. You saw vegetarians in your life. But what was that connection like for you? Can you elaborate?
Yeah, I think that I saw people who wanted to live according to their values and live authentically. And so in like the academic space that I was in as a undergrad and then later as a grad student, I was in university for like 10 consecutive years. So I was in this like quite an academic bubble. People in that space were, in my program, really wanted to live according to their values. They saw the kind of social theory we were doing as a practice, and it was meant to like propel us to live better. And so I think that seeing that, I started to see vegetarianism, or like abstaining from, you know, eating animals, as a practice that was about authenticity and living better and living more ethically. And so that I saw that around me, I thought about it. I wanted to do it a number of times. I was in a relationship at the time and kept like suggesting it to my then partner, who was like, I don't know, it will be difficult. And then as soon as we broke up, I did it. I was like, that's it. I'm my own person. Like it's time. So it was kind of like my actual moment was like a breakup happened and I was like ready to take control of my life. And wanted to be, you know, be like the cool kids and live according to my values. And so that was like the first kind of step I took in that direction.
That's so, I like that. I think a lot of times we, you know, especially when we're younger and in relationships, we tend to box ourselves in according to the confines of whatever normalcy is being presented, whether that's food or, you know, another habit. I remember dating someone once and drinking a lot. And I'm not a big drinker. So I was a little surprised that I would just see myself like, oh, going for that beer or whatever. And as soon as we broke up, it was like, oh, wait, I don't, that's not me. I mean, that's not what I want to be doing. That's not how I, so it is funny how we kind of live in our own, under our own sort of veil sometimes. And I like the power that comes with thinking about breaking free of that as a way of looking at our own behavior, especially because it put you on this journey to be a vegan, to be an animal activist. And when did veganism come in for you?
Veganism came in for me like about 4 years later. Like I went vegetarian like the last year of my undergrad. And then a few years later, I was having like a really quiet summer. Like I was able to like condense a bunch of my work during the academic year so I could take about a month off. And I just started reading. And so that's when I read The World Peace Diet, and I read a book that oddly like my mom recommended to me that was about yoga and vegetarianism. I don't know why I looked at this. I was not particularly into yoga, but somehow like it came through my mom's coworker and I had it in my hands. And there was really in-depth discussion of the dairy industry and what happens to mother cows. And I, at the time, somehow carried this false, naive perspective that cows just produce milk on their own. And I was like pretty embarrassed to realize that I still thought that in like my mid-20s and hadn't realized that like pregnancy was involved and all kinds of, you know, cruelty subsequently. So that awareness like really shifted things for me, and I went vegan immediately. And I think that decision to go vegan took veganism, it took, I guess, like my, what at the time had just felt like food choices, and it turned it into something that was like a philosophy and a way of approaching the world, and, you know, had a much broader impact on many areas of my life.
I had such a similar time frame. I was vegetarian when I was 19, vegan at 24. Same thing. I didn't know about milk. I don't even think I had ever thought about it, to be honest. It just was like, I don't know. I grew up in the 80s drinking a big glass of milk with dinner every night. It was so just normal. That was just what you did, even though it's utterly disgusting. Oh, no pun intended. I didn't mean to be punny. But aside from the horrors of the ethics in milk, it is disgusting. It is so gross. And we grew up because all of those commercials were on TV, and it just shows you the power of advertising, milk, it does a body good, and all of those things. And we just accept that as what it is. But now we know better. But do you think that others do too? Like, do you think it is shifting on a societal level that is reaching the mainstream? And if we were to like be growing up now, would we still be drinking that milk and not thinking about it? Or would it be different?
I think it's shifting. Like, I know that there are so many advocates for plant-based eating and more awareness of the health issues of dairy products. Like, I think it's more commonplace now for people to understand that, like, that's a like growth fluid for baby calves. Like, I do think that's like a more common piece of knowledge. But at the same time, I can't really tell if the rise in plant-based milks or plant-based dairy alternatives are coinciding with an awareness of the cruelty in the dairy industry. Like, I'm not, you know, like, I know that there's been a boom in consumption of plant-based dairy alternatives, but I don't know if that means there's like also more awareness of why dairy is cruel. I think there's been more awareness of the health issues, which is good, but I still think there's a lot of myths about dairy out there, and there's like still so much advertising.
Mm-hmm. Same. I don't know if I exist in like this bubble now. And I like, so I think it's reaching the mainstream, but I don't trust my opinion on it. Like, cause it's just, I enter a room and people are like, the vegan came in. Even if I don't say it, it's like they could smell my, you know, ethics coming out of my sweat glands or something. Or like, maybe it's just patchouli. I don't know. Mm. Whatever it is. I think that when I'm around, vegan discussions happen to happen. I was at the dentist yesterday. It was not fun getting a cavity filled. Of course, that's when they want to talk to you, when you're getting your cavity filled. And it, of course, veganism comes up. I'm like numb on half my face. There's like, there's all these tools in my mouth. And I'm like, yeah, I think, ha, 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 oh, veganism, you know, and then the dentist launches into her, oh, well, I could go vegan, except, and I'm like, it didn't work, needless to say. But the point is, I hope that the world is shifting. I think that maybe it's happening, but I also wonder if that's just something I have to believe. Which brings me to my final question for you today, which is, how do you deal with it? How do you deal with the atrocities all around us? I mean, because you present yourself as a very positive, grounded person, and I believe that is who you are. But I also know that you can't reach that level of groundedness and positivity without first understanding on a very deep level the interwebs of horror. So where do you put it?
That's a good question. I ask myself this sometimes too, of like, where does it go when I'm just kind of functioning day to day? I think one thing is like, I let myself feel everything when it does come up strongly. You know, there are days when for work, I'm having to look at, like, read a lot of details about industrial farming, and it's like horrific, or I'm looking at images and it's sad and heartbreaking. And I just kind of let myself have those days sometimes where I feel everything. And I've wanted to stay in touch with that feeling, because I have noticed in myself sometimes a kind of numbing coping mechanism, I think, where I actually just stop thinking about the reality of it and just kind of do the advocacy. Like, I speak to things, you know, knowing what's effective, but don't let myself feel it. And that's when I tend to actually feel kind of the most disconnected and least inspired, and then start to, you know, feel more withdrawn. So I'm trying to work on this and balance, like, letting myself feel it, but not in a way that's going to take over and limit my capacity as an activist. I also really like something I used to hear in university, and I think I heard Patrice Jones say at an animal rights conference years ago, which is like, hope is an obligation. Hope isn't necessarily how you feel every day. Hope is just what we have to do to move forward and act as though we can make the world better. And so I think I've always from early on in university when I was thinking about social change and interested, had this perspective that like, I will always be hopeful. I will always act as if my efforts are worthwhile, that every moment of advocacy, every moment of, you know, like love in the world is good and valuable in itself. And so I try to do that. At least like let myself have the feelings, have just enough feeling going at any time to sustain me and be authentic. And yeah, just keep going with hope as an obligation, because I think that's the only way to move forward.
Right. It can be something we opt into. I totally agree. And I think that that's a perfect way to conclude. PJ, if you could please reiterate for our flock how people can find you online and support your efforts, that would be amazing.
You can find me on LinkedIn, PJ Nyman. You can email me directly, pjnyman@mercyforanimals.org. And then I would also, I'm a board member at Encompass. So I recommend checking out Encompass, encompassmovement.org, and supporting their work.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for spending time with me today on our Hen House and also on the Flock bonus segment. This was really cool. I absolutely loved this interview. I hope that you'll come back a lot. I hope you'll come back and talk about all of the work that you have planned for this year with Encompass. And just in general, I'd love to hear what's going on in Canada. So thanks again so much for joining us today, PJ. And I hope that you have a wonderful, good luck year of 2022.
Thank you so much, Jasmine. It's been great being here.